If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with Rosie O'Donnell, and then you'll hear me ask a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump is flailing as Republicans squabble over his signature piece of legislation, his tax cut plan. Meanwhile, amid the special counsel's Russia probe, and after the terror attack in Manhattan, he's sounding increasingly authoritarian. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump has gone 9 months without a major legislative achievement as his health care bill imploded and his infrastructure plan fizzled. So he's betting everything on the tax cut plan Republicans unveiled today. Now, this is not the largest tax cut in history. Larger tax cuts were passed twice under Obama and once under Reagan. But as usual, that has not stopped Trump from lying over and over again.
This will be the biggest tax cut in history, in the history of our country, and that's great.
It'll be the largest tax cuts in the history of our country by far.
This is the largest tax cut in the history of our country.
All told, it'll be the greatest tax reduction in the history of our country.
So we're going to have the largest tax cut ever.
A giant, beautiful, massive, the biggest ever in our country, tax cut.
Man, he just cannot help himself. Was he like this when Ivanka was born? This is the first baby ever born. There's never been anything like this in the history of the world. Donald, you already have an older son. That guy, I'll believe it when he releases his birth certificate. Now, Republicans were originally supposed to unveil their tax plan yesterday, but delayed the announcement until today because they couldn't agree on ways to pay for their giant corporate tax cut. In fact, Republicans couldn't even come to an agreement on the name of the bill. ABC News reported yesterday that less than 24 hours before the bill is slated to be revealed, there's still dispute over the name. Trump has been insisted that the bill be called the Cut, Cut, Cut Act. The Cut, Cut, Cut Act. Our president is so addled, he can only think in chants. Lock her up, build the wall, cut, cut, cut. Mr. President, what's on the agenda today? We want golf. Now, it would still be helpful, of course, if the president of the United States could actually articulate to voters what the plan does and why it would be good for the country. But as we saw with healthcare, he can't do that because he doesn't know anything. In fact, at a cabinet meeting yesterday, when Trump tried to explain the details of the tax plan, all he could do was describe in the most generic terms possible the basic process of passing a bill.
The House is, I must tell you, they've been working really hard, and they're coming up with a great plan. And the Senate's coming up with a great plan, and they're going to be put together, and something's going to come out of that will be, I think, really, really something very special. Again, we're doing Senate, we're doing a House, it's put together, and then we have our beautiful new tax cuts and reform, and I think it'll be very special.
Trump isn't Schoolhouse Rock, he's just Rock. Also, I love when he turns to Tillerson for help. Rex, don't ask me, I think you're a moron. Just to give you an idea how little Trump understands about actual policy, yesterday he also claimed that in tandem with cutting taxes, his administration was rolling back supposedly burdensome regulations that were liberating business, a mythical GOP talking point that defies all evidence. And as usual, Trump went overboard in his description of how bad these regulations are.
The Republicans want to lower taxes, and we want to get rid of regulations. You're going to see a lot of additional relief from these horrible regulations that have been killing our country. They've literally been killing.
That's a little like claiming that a 35-mile-per-hour speed limit is killing people. If those people were doing 80, they would have been home way before the accident happened. Another problem with this tax plan, aside from the president's inability to sell it, is the fact that most voters apparently dislike it. One poll found that only 28% said they strongly or somewhat supported the plan. And a majority wants to see tax increases for large corporations and for the wealthy. But while Trump flails on his signature legislative proposal, he's also becoming increasingly authoritarian on issues of national security and criminal justice. After the terror attack in Manhattan on Tuesday, Trump repeatedly lashed out on Twitter and to reporters, even going so far as to deride our system of trying criminal suspects in civilian courts, a hallmark of our Constitution.
We also have to come up with punishment that's far quicker and far greater than the punishment these animals are getting right now. They'll go through court for years. At the end, there'll be who knows what happens.
When Trump says who knows what happens, you know that means he doesn't know what happens. But maybe it's sad. Maybe this whole time we thought he was being rhetorical, but maybe he's actually asking, who knows what happens? Rex, do you know? Rex? And then last night, Trump took the unprecedented and chilling step of demanding the toughest possible sentence for the suspect even before a trial had taken place. In an angry late-night tweet, Trump demanded in all caps that the suspect should get the death penalty. Hey, man, you're the president now. You're not an old crank yelling at the TV over the bar. When you tweet that, you're jamming yourself into the judicial process and tainting the jury pool in the same way you probably taint every pool you get into. Of course, Trump's also been taking aim at the current immigration laws, calling for a new draconian crackdown on legal immigration and eliminating what's known as the Diversity Lottery Program, a program signed into law in 1990 by George H.W. Bush. But again, Trump knows so little about the program, he can't even pronounce the word diversity.
I am today starting the process of terminating the Diversity Lottery Program. I'm going to ask Congress to immediately initiate work to get rid of this program. Diversity and Diversity Lottery.
Trump only believes in diversity when it comes to pronunciations of the word diversity.
I support diversity as well as diversity. Diversity.
But while Trump stumbles on taxes and terrorism, his White House has also been haunted by the special counsel's Russia investigation. There have been reports that Trump is angry and lashing out at his aides over the scandal. But on Wednesday, Trump called a New York Times reporter out of the blue to insist that everything was going great. Trump told the Times, I'm actually not angry at anybody. I'm in the office early and leave late. It's very smooth. Honestly, I'm really enjoying it. This has been him enjoying it? Dear God, what's it gonna look like when he starts to hate it? You'll just log into Twitter and there'll be a gaping rage hole. In reality, Trump is becoming increasingly desperate and sounding more and more authoritarian. He continues to threaten many of the basic principles this country thrives on, including due process, the rule of law, and of course,
diversity.
This has been A Closer Look.
Ryan Reese, audience-born comedian for Late Night with Seth Meyers here with Chuck from Lubbock, Texas, who just came from a live taping. We're curious at the show, do you follow President Trump on Twitter?
No, I do not.
Do you feel that there's any benefit to him tweeting out to the American people the way he does?
I don't see a lot of benefit in it, no. It seems to be very counterproductive to me.
So given that most people in West Texas are Republican, and the new information that's come out, including the indictments, how would you guys like to see this play out?
I think as long as we can get the truth, I think it's hard with if all you do is listen to the media and watch the news, I think it's hard to get the real answer. I'm not sure how we're ever going to get there.
So liberal or Republican, you just want the truth?
Absolutely. Yep.
So Chuck, if you don't necessarily think that the media is being unbiased? Where do you get your information from, and who do you trust?
I mean, if we could get, I don't know, maybe some sort of report, but I do think the information definitively, what we want, is from the investigation, not fed through the media, where it could potentially, not necessarily, but could potentially be slanted.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Our guest tonight is an Emmy Award-winning talk show host and actress. She returns to television in the new comedy series Smilf, which premieres Sunday night on Showtime. Please welcome to the show the former occupant of this studio, Rosie O'Donnell, everybody. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. It's like deja vu.
It is deja vu. But, of course, we were talking, you know, sets are completely different. Does this even feel like your old studio?
Not one bit.
Yeah.
No, I was actually walking through, and I said, oh, maybe they're not in our studio. And Donna said, the wardrobe person, you know, she said to me, no, this is actually your exact studio. We had people come out this way for reasons unknown to me, and then I had to do a little dance and meet them and hug and then run back.
Yeah.
This is much more strange.
Well, this is our second set in the time we had the show. We started and we had a weird swinging stage. We did a lot of things wrong in the beginning too.
Yeah, it happens.
I had to jump on the desk as it passed by.
Well, that keeps you in shape and your core muscles tone.
The fact was, I was going to age out of it though.
Eventually.
Eventually,
sadly,
age
we
out.
All do.
We all do. So you did a show here from '96 to 2002.
Yes.
Do you miss having a talk show? Did you enjoy your time doing it?
I loved doing it. It was like a dream job. But I knew going in that I was more of a sprinter than a marathoner, you know? And I had a little baby boy who was just 2 years old, took his first steps, actually, in this studio.
Unbelievable. That's fantastic.
He's now 22 and has enlisted in the Marines.
Fantastic.
Yes, he did.
Congratulations to him.
Weeks ago.
Okay.
And I had a great time doing it, but I definitely felt I was done when I was done, and then I needed a very long break.
Yeah, well, I hope you got your break, and I'm very excited about what you're coming back in now. And certainly you've done plenty between the time you left your show and this show, but Smilf is this true? This is your first, like, sort of recurring role in a television show?
It is. When I was very young, I was on Give Me a Break in 1986.
Yes.
Yeah, with Nell Carter. The role was Maggie O'Brien, I'm sure it's familiar to a lot of people here.
Woo! But, okay.
Yeah, that was it. And that was sort of fun. But I really haven't done one. And when I saw the short film that Frankie Shaw, who's the...
She's the star of the show. We saw her in the clip.
Yeah, beautiful young actress, 31 years old. She wrote it, stars in it, directs it. She's absolutely amazing. And I saw a short film she did, and she FaceTimed me instead of an interview. She FaceTimed me and said, would you do it? I said, I'll do anything you want, because you are... what, you know, feminists have hoped would come along 20 years later.
Oh, that's really exciting.
She really is. She's a phenomenal girl.
Now, from the clip, we could all see you wear a sort of gray wig on the show. Does that give you...
That's actually my real hair.
Oh, it is. Okay.
It is, and...
But it's made more gray than it is in real life.
Not really.
Okay.
Now that
so
I'm done
CGI,
filming...
The CGI...
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Now that I had the extensions taken out last night.
Okay.
And a little darkness to try to cover.
Okay.
Part of the gray. But I am letting it go in gray for this role, and my teenagers are not very happy about it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. In fact, I have been banned from volleyball games.
Wow. They don't want their mom to have gray hair at a volleyball game?
Apparently that's a thing now with the kids. I didn't know. But, I mean, I guess it would be weird to have your mother show up and look like your grandmother, I guess. But yeah. I don't know. It's kind of freeing. I don't really get noticed.
Oh, interesting. So you have more anonymity because of the fact that you...
Yes. Yeah. And I was at the Admiral's Club in LAX.
Oh, look at you.
That's right. Yeah. I have a gold card.
Wow.
And
so this is the American Airlines Lounge.
Yeah.
Wow.
Where all the cool people are.
That is amazing.
And I went up to the bar. And
the coffee's free there, right?
And the croissant.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I'll talk to people if you're not in there yet. But I went there and I went to the bar and I saw Josh Lucas, that amazing
actor from yes.
Sweet Home Alabama. You all remember yep. him. And I was like, oh, that's that guy. He was on my show. Oh, that's Josh something. I go, hey, handsome actor man, can I buy you a drink? Literally, this is what he did to me. And I was like, what? Wait. I go, Josh, it's me. He's like, oh, my God, I am so sorry. Oh, my God. And he's the sweetest, and we have kids the same age, believe it or not.
I thought you were going to say you had kids together, and I was like, oh, my God. This did more than a 180.
Lots of news breaking tonight, Seth. I'm actually a heterosexual and have children with Josh Lucas.
Oh, wow.
No, but we have babies who are both like 4 and 5 years old, and we're going to, you know, have some play dates. He's doing a play now in New York. I'm actually doing a play.
That's very exciting. I know you are a lover of Broadway.
Yes.
You've done a lot of plays in recent years. Tell us about the one you're about to do.
It's a new David Rabe play called Good for Otto. Mm-hmm. And Ed Harris, Amy Madigan, and F. Murray Abraham.
What a cast.
Yeah, no pressure at all for the comic from
Well, you'll just tell him you played O'Brien on the Nell Carter Show.
Maggie O'Brien, 1986. Was a good piece of work. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I've never really done a play. I've done a lot of musicals, but I've never done a play. I did the Nora Ephron play that she wrote about clothing, you know, Love, Loss, and What I Wore. Uh-huh. But that was us sitting on a stage and reading. This is actually a real play. And you know, David Rabe, who wrote Hurley Burley, there are long monologues.
Uh-huh.
And there's no cut, take two, you know.
Are you already preparing for it?
I am.
Okay. Are you guys rehearsing it, or is it just sort of self-prep at this point?
Well, we start rehearsing in January, but because I have these multiple-page, every character does multiple-page sort of monologues, I recorded them, and then when I'm, you know, working out, which I don't do, I, truthfully, while I'm eating Entenmann's crumb cakes, trying not to hate-tweet the president, I listen to it, and so that's how I sort of remember, is I keep listening to it over and over and over, and hopefully by the time we start rehearsal, I'll be ahead of the game.
That is very exciting.
Yeah.
And I do think it's that thrilling thing of, because of the people you're working with, it will elevate your work.
Totally. You want to rise to their level. I mean, those are some amazing actors, and David Rabe, it's really an honor to do it, and I'm thrilled for the challenge, although mildly terrified. But
you're going to see Hamilton soon, right? When are you off to see it?
Yeah, this weekend. I'm seeing it for the 27th time.
27th time. That's 27 times.
That's correct, Seth.
And have you felt any dips in your 27 times, or have you had the same reaction pretty much consistently through it?
Well, I cry every time.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
I went to see it at the Public, and I was just devastated by it.
So for those who don't know, because now obviously it's on Broadway in a giant theater, how small is the Public? How many seats was it then?
Oh, probably it's like under 500 for sure. I mean, you know, it's maybe the size of this. What is this, 200 here?
Yeah, this is about 200.
Yeah, so it's almost maybe this size. That's pretty much
it. Wow, that's amazing. To see a show that now has this scope and scale and also sort of this worldwide phenomenon, to see it in such a small place must be
amazing. Yeah, the Public has done amazing things. Yeah. Like the Chorus Line started there. Uh-huh. And I hope that's right. All the Broadway trivia people are like, you asshole, send, you know. I'm pretty sure it did. Lots of things start at the Public. Joe Papp is a hero. Okay. Do you see I'm a little edgy?
Yeah.
I spend like pretty much 90% of my waking hours tweeting hatred towards this administration.
Yeah, well, now I want to ask you about this because that is a two-way street. Because Donald Trump has been mad at you for a very long time.
Over a decade.
Over a decade.
Yes.
And did it sort of start? It started from The View, yes?
The View.
Yeah. And it's been really, we've sort of made the joke on the show that he's flip-flopped on everything except you.
It's actually very true.
Yeah.
You know, there was a Tara O'Connor, I believe her name was, a young Irish lass who was junior Miss Trump Atlantic City pageant sexist winner. And she was downtown, 19-year-old girl, drinking and kissing a girl. And it was on the cover of the Post. So he held a press conference right before The View went on live. And he said, just want you to know, I've forgiven her. And this young woman, I'm like, what is he, the pimp? And she's the prostitute? And who is he? He's the moral arbiter of 20-year-old behavior now, right? So then I said, you know, some facts that I just went on Wiki that were easily accessible since this campaign began. That he is bankrupt 4 times, that he got all his money from his father, and that he notoriously cheats private contractors out of their money.
Yes, and that is all
simple
pretty
facts,
well documented.
Yeah. Simple facts.
And so you said this on The View.
And he went bat crazy.
Yeah. And stayed that way.
Stayed that way. So, you know, as bad as everyone feels, and they have felt since November 8th, I know for me, I've been in a severe depression, although I'd like to say, today after your show, I'm going to get a Bob Mueller tattoo.
Oh, that's exciting.
Because I love him.
Where are you going to put it? Have you thought about where you're going to put it?
Right over my heart. I'm so in love with Bob Mueller. I want to get posters. I want to meet him.
Yeah.
I just think he is it.
He doesn't. I don't want to judge Bob Mueller. He looks like a very severe man. Like
you think?
Yeah. He. You know.
No. He looks to me like Superman. Like Captain America, like justice has finally arrived back on our shores, and we are going to right ourselves again. Is that too much?
I will say that if Trump gets indicted, it would be really great if Mueller let you serve the papers. Well, I feel like
I have put in that request by tweet.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting to hear, but you know, nothing really will. I have to say, as a 55-year-old woman who lived through Vietnam, you know, when I was in 1973, my mom died, and 2 months later, they started the Watergate hearings. And I remember as a child feeling, wow, there's no safety in my house, and look, there's no safety in the world. And all of that came right up when he, you know, first of all, when he announced, I was like laughing my ass off.
Same here.
Escalator down with the fake crowd going, like, here's my wife who loves me, and she's like, how do I get out of here? You know, right? And I just thought it would never happen.
Same here. So I've been wrong at every turn.
I said to my therapist, you know, I got this new show, Smilf, but I have to go to Boston to start shooting the day after the election. Do you think it's going to be okay for me to be there? Or what if he wins? She's like, Rosie, you really have to start working on your negative loop in your brain. He is not going to win. Every smart person knows he is not going to win. That night, I was like, listen, you wench. I am here and I have no Zedek! Mommy's better since Bob Mueller last Friday. I love you, Bob. Keep doing what you do, Bob. We love you.
I'm very happy to have you back here. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And I really hope that based on what you said tonight, you managed to get one more tweet out of the president. So
I hope I do, Seth. Yeah. And I want to say honestly very quickly, because I know it's annoying when people compliment the host, what you have been doing has really lifted my spirits. When I have felt submerged under the ice, I turn you on and I go, look at that smart man speaking common sense, making people laugh and making us believe again. So you
means are a lot. Means a lot coming from you. Such a pleasure to have you here. Thank Welcome you home. Rosie O'Donnell, everybody. Snoop from here Sunday night on Showtime.
Hey, this is Kevin from Late Night. I chatted a little bit more with Rosie after her interview with Seth, and this is our conversation backstage. I listen to that New York Times, The Daily, just more for news. It's like 20 minutes long, and like when I'm walking toward it's kind of perfect.
How about the NPR guy is also accused of sexual.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Right? And like the CEO now is
all of
them.
It's so horrible, but it's so prevalent.
I know. It just feels like all of middle management this year is going to go whoop, get promoted somehow because everybody's getting.
If they have a clean slate, right?
Right. That's the, right.
A young friend of mine, like in their 30s, they said to me, a guy, he said, you know, after all this is coming out, I'm thinking like, you know, there was this girl once at a bar and she didn't want to go out and I was kind of drunk and I kissed her and I was kind of grabby and he's like, maybe I'm like that. I'm like, listen, if nothing else, then we at least can have the conversation.
It's true that it makes people sort of assess their own behavior or just think about it. If there's any sort of,
well, you know, it's
silver
weird
lining, but
I had tweeted that when Kevin Spacey thing came out, I said, you know, we all knew about you and you're a creep or whatever. And people said, well, if you knew, you're complicit. I'm like, wait, well, I didn't know. No. Like, what did I know? Right. Nobody came to me personally as a friend and said, this is what Kevin Spacey did to me. But millions of people in the Broadway community. Yeah. It was a known fact about him, the same way of Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Now, when I heard the Harvey Weinstein thing, what surprised me not was that he's a pig who tried to sleep and casting couch all his actresses, but that he actually raped some and would jerk off while he had them barricaded in a, like, I could, if you had said to me that that was going on, I would have said, no, no, no. I thought there were young actresses who are pretty, who have to deal with this every day, men wanting to trade what they perceive to be their power to help their career if you only give them a little. Yeah. Doesn't only happen in show business. It happens at the dry cleaners, right? Yeah. It happens if you're a college professor and you want to get tenure. It happens everywhere, right? And I think that all of this coming out, and I think it's because of Trump. I think it's because, you know, he said, he announced that he was a sexual predator and no one seemed to care. And so, you know, women and men finally said, you know what? I'm not carrying the shame. It's not mine to own. It's yours. And it's for a child who was sexually abused to know that now as a 55-year-old woman to see all of this coming out in the public sphere has been you know, triggering in many ways, but also very inspiring, because the only way that we're going to change the statistics of 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 4 boys are sexually molested in their life before they become 18. The only way we're going to do it is if we start talking about it honestly, you know. But I did want to, like, you know, talk about the fact that people said, well, you knew and you're complicit. Well, it's not my job to tell you about the rumors in the orbit of my world. Right. It's the person who was offended. It's the person who was molested, touched, groped. They have to stand up and tell mm-hmm. their story. And when they do, people who are in their orbit support them. You know, I am always going to support someone who comes out and tells the truth about what happened to them in that way. I know how hard it is to do, and I know how much crap you get for doing that. So I, you know, it's been a really emotionally turbulent time since he got in office, I think, for so many people who had a predatory parent in the house, especially a man who had the power, and you were a child, and you, it's been triggering for millions of people. And I wanted to do a support group online. I really did. I wanted to go, okay, everybody who's not able to sleep because you are so triggered by the fact that the bad guy is in the White House. He's in charge of the nation. Like, that is a terrifying thing.
Well, that must be one of the things that you miss about having a show day to day, is that you can come out and talk about things like these. I guess you can do it via social media, but having the platform with viewers every day to come out.
But
to talk
I'm not
about
sure
that
I would be able to do it, because I'm like, there's two parts. Like, there's the entertainer part, right?
Yeah,
where
right.
I can come and be funny. And then there's the other part, which, you know, is sometimes a deep and dark place, right?
Yeah.
I have major depressive disorder. I fight very hard. I medicated. I, you know, do all I can to stay above the surface. And when something, a world catastrophe happens. So, you know, when Columbine was the first time, I think, that I really fell through the ice. And then, you know, 9/11 and then Katrina. And when world catastrophes happen, I am really at a loss. And so since November 8th, there has been a world catastrophe that I hope right now is being rectified, you know.
Well, we had talked a little bit before you came on the show about shooting the show Smilt that you're on and Showtime, and you guys shot the pilot the day after the election. And
yes.
Can you kind of talk about things that have come full circle, like you said?
Well, when I got there, you know, it was the day before, and I went into the wardrobe fitting, and as a joke on the way out with all the crew there, I was like, see you guys tomorrow, unless he wins. In that case, I'll be in the Charles River. Like, ha, 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 right? And then he won, and I was in shock. Now, I don't really remember a lot of shooting the pilot, but I do remember that the first day I hadn't slept all night. I was totally cortisol running, crazy fight or flight hormone, right? I walk in and we're shooting in a deli, a bakery that's open, because we only had half, you know, it was a pilot. We didn't have the money to buy the whole bakery. And there's a beautiful older woman like Helen Hayes. And frankly, that's my base. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If comedians have a base, old women who are old enough to be my mom, I'm 55. This woman was in her 80s.
Mm-hmm.
She totally could have been my mom. They know that I didn't have a mom. It's sort of a thing I talk about a lot. And normally they're so effusive to me. Like, I can't, you know, go through a mall without an old Irish lady hugging me. And it's kind of a beautiful thing. So I was sitting there and I saw her ordering, and the woman behind the counter said, are you okay, Rosie? I go, I don't feel good. I feel like I'm going to get sick because I can't believe that Trump won. And this Irish cute little Helen Hayes turned around and said, it's not your turn, Rosie O'Donnell. It's not your turn. It's our turn now. I never liked you anyway with your big mouth. What do you have to say today, Rosie O'Donnell? I was floored. I felt like my knees were going to buckle. I didn't even have a retort, because it was like this cute little Irish lady, like a mother figure. And so I then thought, like, I really did go into a serious depression, because I thought, I don't know how to be in the world where this is a reality, where the cruelty of this man is lauded and celebrated. Like, it really threw me for a loop. Well, so then the show did not get picked up initially, and then it got picked up in May. And when they called to tell me, they said, you know, we're ready to go forward. I said, could I please reshoot my scenes in the pilot? Because when I saw the pilot, I looked like I was in shock, because I was. So they did allow me, and the scene you showed today on Seth's show was definitely the reshoot. The first time I wasn't present like that. But so the last day we shot was last night. So the Mueller indictments have come down.
Right.
The dominoes have started to fall.
Right.
I feel like there's hope again and reason to believe that we're going to survive this as a nation. And
And I'm on the set. We're in the same bakery. And I'm like, wow, look at this. First day we were here, and now he's almost done, and we're here again. Mm-hmm. And an old Irish guy walks in and goes, are you Rosie O'Donnell? I said, yes, I am. He said, you're an American hero. You're a patriot, and I love meeting you. And I was like, well, will you look at this? I had Helen Hayes telling me I was an asshole, and now I've got Bernard Hughes telling me I'm the greatest thing in the world.
The base has changed.
The base is, I think people have sort of understood that we were on the precipice of disaster. And listen, it's not over yet, and I know I'm highly optimistic, but if you have been starving in a desert for 9 months to have even a crumb of hope again feels like the best meal I've ever had in my life.
Having a show, you used to talk a lot about your personal life, your kids and your family. Yeah. Sort of, we were talking a little bit about, you have a 4-year-old.
I do. Yeah. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Most 50-year-old people who have had heart attacks don't adopt newborns, but I did. Yeah. And I'm happy I did. She's a beautiful baby. She is very smart. She's diagnosed with autism, highly, highly verbal, mm-hmm. which is sort of how I knew to get her tested. She was one, mm-hmm. and she said, I've been impaled. Which is from Frozen, you know, Olaf walks into the icicle. You know, she is really a remarkable little thing. She loves science. She loves experiments. She loves, and it's very interesting to have a child at 50. So I parented in my 30s. I parented in my 40s, and now I'm parenting in my 50s. And it's very fascinating to see the difference and what's changed. And you know, it's kind of hard to find a play date when you're a 55-year-old with a 4-year-old.
Sure.
That's why one of the writers here was like, get her. Can I talk to her? She has a baby who's that age and she's gay. I'm like, maybe we could become friends. Yeah. Because honestly, you know, when I was 30 having children, everybody 30 has kids, right? At 55, not a lot of toddlers running around. But she's a joy, and I have 4 other children. I have a 22-year-old son who was just enlisted in the Marines, and a 20-year-old daughter who's sadly a little bit lost right now. And then I have a 17-year-old son who's just graduating high school, and a 14-year-old daughter who's a freshman in high school. And then the baby. So that's a lot of kids. Here's what I have to tell. Don't do 5. It's a lot.
It sounds like a lot. Rosie, thank you so much for being
Thank you.
Here.
Now, where is this on? Is this on Seth?
It's on iTunes.
Oh, it's on iTunes.
Subscribe on iTunes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. One day I hope to do a podcast because I like having to work with no makeup.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
That's
yeah.
a big criteria for me. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so
much. I'm going to go to Nobu and have some sushi.
Great.
And then I'm going to pray to God there's another indictment unsealed tomorrow
we'll
morning.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.